Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
We reached the old wolf in time to watch a fierce green fire dying in her eyes. I was young then and full of trigger itch. I thought that because fewer wolves meant more deer, that no wolves would mean hunter's paradise. But after seeing the green fire die, I sensed that neither the wolf nor the mountain agreed with such a view.
The voice of Peter Coyote from the movie Green Fire, Aldo Leopold and a Land Ethic for Our Time. I'm Glenn Moberg. When Aldo Leopold was a young man, he shot and killed a wolf and was haunted by the green fire he saw in the animal's eyes as it passed away. That phrase, green fire, has been adopted by a growing group of retired and active scientists in Wisconsin. Scientists who are former employees of the DNR or who have done research work for our universities, nonprofit groups, or the private sector. They came together this past Earth Day. The scientists of Wisconsin's Green Fire are upset with trends that they see happening in America and here in Wisconsin. In a news release, they say that under Governor Walker, budgets have been slashed for Wisconsin state parks, land management, and scientific research. Information on climate change has been scrubbed from DNR communications, and restrictions on DNR staff have limited access to science at public hearings. The scientists at Wisconsin's Green Fire say they are stepping in to fill the void. Our guests today are three members of Wisconsin's Green Fire Interim Board of Directors. In our studio, we have coordinator, biologist, and educator Terry Dalton, who has done research for the DNR and the National Park Service, and Nancy Larson, a water quality specialist who recently retired from the DNR after 27 years with the state of Wisconsin. Joining us on the phone, we have Kim Wright. She is the executive director of Midwest Environmental Advocates. If you got a question or a comment for our guests, if this subject matter is something that concerns you, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. It's guitarist Jeff Beck getting us underway today. Terry, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about your scientific background, particularly your work with the DNR and the National Park Service.
Well, I actually started out many years ago with the National Park Service as a scientific researcher and assistant to many high-level doctoral researchers, and ended up as a park ranger doing interpretive programs, and that led me to environmental education, which is one of my fields of pursuit. At a point about 15 years ago, I started working for the Bureau of Science Services doing field work, mostly on common loon research and the impacts of shoreline development and mercury on loons.
And that's part of the Department of Natural Resources, the Bureau of Scientific Services. Why did you feel it was important for you to get involved in this new organization, Wisconsin's Green Fire?
Well, actually, this is an idea that sort of started gelling after the last election in November, when I think a number of us were concerned about not only state directions but federal directions when Scott Pruitt was named as the secretary of the director of the EPA. And it was an email chain that kind of started taking off and growing, folks thinking that it's about time we started standing up for science and getting active. And for me personally, I live in the Northwoods and love the area. My degrees are in environmental education. I really feel strongly that it's very important not only for us to have good science but to communicate that to the public.
Nancy Larson, you spent 27 years working for the state of Wisconsin. You were a water quality specialist for the DNR. Tell us about your work with the organization.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn. Well, I, I've worked in the field of water quality for many years. As a staff person, one of my main focuses was on protecting Lake Superior and working with other organizations and forming partnerships to do so. Then I got into management positions, and most recently I was the water program leader for the northern part of the state. So overseeing all parts of our water program. And then also I was an acting deputy director of the Bureau of Watershed Management before I retired. So in those capacities, I worked with many staff, many organizations, many private developers and organizations that had projects, private businesses that had projects. So it was a broad experience in the water division in DNR.
You also received the DNR's Rebecca Wallace Memorial Award in recognition of those partnerships that you were talking about with groups, all in order to protect the water quality of Lake Superior.
Thank you for mentioning that, Glenn. Yes, I'm very proud of that. Just because it's very important that within any agency, we're working with a lot of outside groups, a lot of local groups that are involved in protection efforts, and that we have a good effort to communicate with the public. And so it meant a lot to me to be recognized with that award.
And you also worked for the state of Minnesota.
Right. Yeah. Before coming to Wisconsin, I worked for the state of Minnesota.
Now, you retired last year from the DNR. What were the factors that made you want to leave the agency?
Well, I had a good career, and I'm proud of my career. It was time for me to retire based on my age and other commitments. I would have liked to continue working longer, but there was just a lot of circumstances to it. I have a deep commitment to public service, and the people that I worked with also have that. And it was a little hard to retire because that continued, and that being a part of Wisconsin's Green Fire gives me an opportunity to continue that public service.
What was morale like at the DNR when you left?
Morale has been really going downhill. It's been difficult with the budget cuts that we've received, the inability to fill our vacant positions. So for a lot of regulatory staff, they've had their territories double and triple. The public don't necessarily understand that they're not receiving the level of service they desire because we're just too short-staffed to do it. You know, people aren't interested in that explanation, but that was the truth that I saw. We were simply too short-staffed to do everything we needed to do to serve the public well.
And how did your role in communicating with Wisconsin citizens and specifically members of the media change from your early days with the DNR to what it's like now under Governor Walker?
Well, we've seen a change over time. It didn't all just start under Governor Walker. It used to be, decades ago, that it was more common for staff people, whether it be wildlife managers or water quality people, to speak directly with the media and even to write columns in newspapers. The information flow has become much more controlled, much more so now, so that for most issues, especially controversial issues, there's a management spokesperson for that issue. And I served in that role on many issues as a manager.
Now, Kathy Stepp has stepped down, no pun intended, after leading the DNR for several years. She's now taken a position in the Environmental Protection Agency under President Trump. What's your perspective on that?
Well, I'm interested to know who the new Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources will be. I'm hopeful that it will be a person with good experience and a good sense of leadership.
And what did you think of Kathy Stepp?
I'm not going to make a comment on that.
Okay. Kim Wright, you're the Executive Director of Midwest Environmental Advocates. Tell us about that organization.
Midwest Environmental Advocates was founded in direct response to the loss of the public intervener. The public intervener was established in 1967 by Republican Governor Warren Knowles. Lawyers in the State Department of Justice that represented citizens with environmental issues, and even to the point of if they took legal action against the DNR, it was very unique.
And you've got a legal background, Kim, not a background in science. What got you involved in environmental protection issues, I meant to say?
Well, I have the great privilege of the early part of my career working statewide. I worked for the Nature Conservancy, working with private and public landowners and managers to protect our great unspoiled places. And that just gave me the opportunity to see firsthand the deep conservation ethic all over the state of Wisconsin. And I'm still working statewide today, and I have not seen that conservation ethic change in the people of Wisconsin.
Well, as a person with a law degree, how do you approach the changes that have taken place in the Wisconsin DNR and the threats that you see to the environment? Are there legal challenges that you're prepared to make?
Well, the big problem that I see is as government, as the DNR has more and more abdicated its responsibility, you know, and it's really not the good men and women of DNR. It's the budget cuts and, you know, reining in of science-based decision-making by leadership, that those burdens have shifted to citizens. The people we represent are taking on really serious burdens of protecting public health in their communities. And we're the, you know, only public interest environmental law center in Wisconsin that represents those people.
Why did you get involved in Wisconsin's Green Fire?
Midwest Environmental Advocates filed a petition with the EPA asking them to bring Wisconsin back into compliance with the Federal Clean Water Act. And after we filed that petition, we received calls from over 50 retired DNR staff saying, how can we help? We know this is a problem. And so at that time, George Meyer, former secretary of the DNR, and I really put our heads together to say, how do we capture the institutional knowledge from these fine men and women that, you know, just were part of one of the best science agencies in the country? And it was like all good ideas. There was just this convergence and energy and interest that swirled around the state, and here we are with Green Fire.
Well, Wisconsin's Green Fire was started on Earth Day back in April with about 70 members. Terry Dalton, according to your news release, how has the membership grown since then?
Well, it's been pretty interesting. It's been growing organically without us doing a lot of proactive recruitment. We have over 100 natural resource professionals on our mailing list at this point, and probably something around 60 general public people who have just contacted us and said we want to be on the list. And we're just finishing up our first actual membership fundraising drive and have been really pleased with the results of that. We're really doing quite well. But I would say, you know, we have over 100 scientists now that have signed up. And as Kim said, this idea sort of came together. You know, there were people all around the state who I think were thinking about a kind of group like this, and it's really taken off as a result.
How many of these scientists used to work with the DNR?
Well, actually, we have about 78% are from agencies, but my last count, we had about 45% were from the DNR, and then the rest were from a variety of other agencies, universities, NGOs. But one of the interesting things is one of surveys of our membership that was just done by Dr. Stan Temple counted up the number of years of professional experience from 95 people who responded to our science survey. We have over 2,580 years of professional service amongst our membership already. So it's an impressive amount of science understanding and learning.
We're talking to Terry Dalton, Nancy Larson, and Kim Wright of the organization Wisconsin's Green Fire. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Andy from Phillips gave us a call, and he is voicing his concern that the government may continue the trend of selling public lands. Kim Wright, why don't you take that one?
Boy, that's a concern to me as well. My early days in my career, mostly protecting state natural areas, we have strong state laws on especially dedicated state natural areas. And back in the day, we just felt those would be protected forever because it takes an act of the legislature and the governor to undermine those protections. And, you know, 20 years ago, if someone would have told me that our state government was behaving the way it is without input of the public and without, you know, really respecting our conservation history, I would have thought they were kind of kooky. So I'm very concerned about the lack of valuation of public lands by, I would really say, the legislature and the governor and leadership at DNR.
And Glenn, if I can add, in our organization, Wisconsin's Green Fire, public lands is one of the issues that's of great concern to us. So we expect to be working on that issue as well, perhaps developing position papers, analysis, and possible testimony at the appropriate venues.
Let's go through some of your problems with the way things are going today. Lawmakers have eliminated taxpayer support for state parks and slashed funding for the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund. Kim Wright, your perspective on that.
I used to manage the grant program for the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund, and what a great bargain for the people of Wisconsin. I worked with land trusts around the state. We had a great growth in local groups that were protecting special places, and more often than not bringing more than the 50% required match to the table. And all of those lands that are purchased either by local units of government or land trusts under the stewardship program are then folded into these great legal protections and open to the public. So those funds also are what provides funding for the department for protecting lands as well. And this has been a bipartisan program for a long time, and you know, I've just been so impressed that Wisconsin has a very science-based approach, or has had a very science-based approach to protecting public lands, and also a geographically sort of population-based approach. So it's just disheartening to see this widely popular program being undermined.
And another one of your concerns, the group's concerns, the drastic reduction in the DNR's 70-year presence at the Wisconsin State Fair to include only small displays about state parks, state forests, and endangered resources. Also cuts to the Wisconsin Natural Resources Magazine and the Wisconsin Environmental Education Board. Terry Dalton.
Well, you know, if you think about it, one of the things that Wisconsin's always been proud of is its great natural resources and conservation history. And if we want to engender that history and that knowledge in future generations, the last thing we want to do is cut opportunities for the public and particularly young people to learn the science and the information and the values of all those things. The State Fair, the Natural Resources Magazine are things that were very low cost, if not paid for themselves. The state parks are a great venue for young people to get out and experience the outdoors. You know, there's been a lot of talk in the last few years about the fact that young people aren't outdoor enough and they don't have enough exposure to the natural world, and that's something that we need to be focusing on. So why cut these programs that are so critical to future decision makers and future land managers and citizens?
And two of the concerns of Wisconsin's Green Fire involves access to the public by DNR scientists. Nancy, we touched on one of those issues already, DNR staff not being allowed to talk to the media unless they're given prior approval. But also one of your complaints involves access through testifying at legislative hearings. DNR staff not allowed to do that unless they're specifically requested to appear by a bill's author or committee chair.
Yeah, and that change makes it so that public policy is debated with an absence of that expertise coming to the table. We're the people, excuse me, the DNR and the university are the people who are paid by the taxpayers to understand the issues, to know about the issues, to be practitioners of those issues, and to not have them be able to impart that knowledge and that information in these public venues where public policy is debated really kind of cuts us off as a society from the information that we are paying for.
Now, the DNR also cut back 11 full-time positions in education and 18 positions in scientific research in the organization's Bureau of Science Services. Back in October of last year, I participated in a 12th Senate District debate hosted by WXPR Radio in Rhinelander. I'm going to play a clip from it now featuring Senator Tom Tiffany, a Republican from Hazelhurst, who I think would take issue with your assertion that the changes that have taken place with the DNR have hurt the organization. I asked him specifically how the DNR was doing a year after the elimination of those research jobs in the Bureau of Science Services.
Our environment gets cleaner year after year. I mean, we really do a terrific job as a society in making sure, I mean, it's preeminent. Go into our kids' schools and see how much it is taught. I mean, people take great care with the environment, and we get cleaner. We get a cleaner environment year after year. As far as the research scientists, some of them were going off and doing projects that didn't fit within the discipline of the Department of Natural Resources. Now, anyone that left the Bureau of Science Services, they could get a job with the Department of Natural Resources, but it was important to get them within the discipline if they're working on fisheries, if they're dealing on air and water, whatever the issue may be. It's important that they work on them because they messed up the deer herd in northern Wisconsin, and all you got to do is talk to hunters about that. I've been pushing on them for years to increase the bobcat permits. There are, when you talk to people who have the trail cams out there, there's proof. There is such a burgeoning bobcat population that it shouldn't take 17 years, as it has, to get a permit. And so some of those things were as a result of their work. It was time to get them within the discipline of the rest of the agency.
That's Senator Tom Tiffany in a debate on WXPR Public Radio in Rhinelander last October. Senator Tiffany says those research scientists who were dismissed in the Bureau of Science Services were not in line with the overall goals of the department. They were involved in activities that were not directly relevant to the department's core mission of protecting the state's wildlife herd and fisheries. Nancy Larson.
Glenn, I'd like to first start by just responding to the first statement that the senator made about our environment getting cleaner. I would say our environment has been getting cleaner because we invest in it. And if we cut back that investment, we will not continue to see that improvement. And we have been able to provide environmental education because we invest in it. If we quit investing in it, that will not continue. So those things don't happen by themselves. You know, they're driven by what we're willing to invest in as a society. Regarding the research scientists, yes, some of them were placed in other parts of the department, but some positions were eliminated. So we did overall see for the state of Wisconsin a reduction in the number of scientists that we have working for the Department of Natural Resources.
Glenn, if I could just jump in, Senator Tiffany expressed concern about the deer herd. Well, one of the changes that's happened is the whole way that the DNR collects data on deer has changed. In fact, much of the data collection has been eliminated. So if we really want to monitor deer populations, the last thing we want to do is restrict the amount of data that we collect and, in many instances, eliminate that data collection entirely.
What about
Glenn, this is Kim. I just have to respond to that our environment is getting cleaner year after year. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Wisconsin has been a leader in implementing and enforcing the Clean Water Act. When the federal law was passed, they actually tapped DNR staff and UW scientists to write the implementing regs. We are in trouble with the EPA. Our Clean Water Act programs are we are not issuing technically sufficient permits. We're not monitoring and enforcing those permits. There was an independent study by the Legislative Audit Bureau that showed that DNR is following its own rules as little as 4% of the time. It's been widely reported that enforcement is significantly down under the Walker DNR. And what was really shocking to me when I heard these statistics is that even things like fish and game regulations are down. So hunting deer outside of the season dropped 85%, those citations. So I just take great issue with Senator Tiffany about our environment getting cleaner. We have more and more impaired waters. We've got landscape scale destruction with frac sand mining that the state has basically abdicated the responsibility to regulate. So, I mean, this is what I see up close every day are, you know, the threats to public health and the threats to our environmental commons from lack of enforcement of existing laws.
We're talking with members of Wisconsin's Green Fire Interim Board of Directors. You just heard Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates. We also have with us coordinator and biologist Terry Dalton and former DNR water quality specialist Nancy Larson. I'm Glenn Moberg. We do want to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a question or comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Here's a portion of a song I wrote a few years ago called Aldo Leopold's Shack.
As a young man, Aldo Leopold shot a wolf and watched it die. He always would remember the green fire in its eye. Predator and prey are just like night and day. It's a lesson for every Jill and Jack at Aldo Leopold's Shack. Take me back to Aldo Leopold's Shack. Down by the Wisconsin River, there's an outhouse in the back. Tulips planted on the side, eagles flying in the sky, pine trees reaching oh so high at Aldo Leopold's Shack.
Support for WPR comes from the Wet Whistle Wine Festival, September 15th and 16th in Algoma, with a Saturday grape stomp, specialty foods, and live music. VONSTIEHL.com. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
I went back to Ohio, but my pretty countryside been paved down the middle by a government that had no pride. The farms of Ohio had been replaced by shopping malls, and music filled the air from Seneca to Cahoga Falls. City, area,
the Pretenders' Chrissy Hine talking about the destruction of the countryside in her home state of Ohio, taking us into our next segment of Route 51 as we continue our conversation with a group that is concerned about the countryside in Wisconsin. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests today are Wisconsin Green Fire Coordinator Terry Dalton, former DNR Water Quality Specialist Nancy Larson, and Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates. And again, if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Let's talk about climate change. One of your organization's complaints is that scientific information on climate change has been scrubbed from Department of Natural Resources communications, Nancy.
Yeah, so this is an issue not just for the state of Wisconsin, but we're seeing that kind of removal of information from federal agencies as well. So it's a key case in point where information that, again, we taxpayers paid for not being available to the public. So, you know, our sense is that that information should be available, and some of our members are very interested and have experience with climate change. So, you know, we may be putting out some additional information or making those people available for the media. So, again, it's a very important issue for us.
Terry Dalton, how is climate change affecting our wildlife habitats and ecosystems in northern and central Wisconsin? And if it is, shouldn't the DNR be talking about it?
Well, there's a lot of research on climate change in Wisconsin and potential impacts down the road, in particular over the next, you know, 20 to 50 to 100 years. As you look at most of that in general, you see some shifts of tree species to the north. Some of the trees that we have here in the future may not be as prevalent, things like white birch, even sugar maples. You know, some of the boreal species like balsam fir, you know, some of those northern bog habitats, those things may not be doing as well in the future. But there's even a bigger question than just species and habitats, and it's how humans are going to adapt and respond to climate change as it happens. There's a strong scientific consensus that this is happening. It is caused by humans. And we're starting to see places where communities, towns, municipalities, counties need to be thinking ahead and planning for how we're going to be dealing with changes in the climate as it goes, whether it's increased violent weather events or simply shifts in how we need to be planning our communities and developing them. So it's really important, thinking down in the long run. Natural resources aren't something we plan for tomorrow. We plan out 50, 100, 200 years. It's a long-term perspective that keeps the environment safe and productive so that humans can continue to have a sound economy and a good life.
I'm going to play a quick clip here, and then I'm going to try to get Kim Wright's reaction to it. The overwhelming majority of the world's climate scientists do say that the Earth's climate is warming and that human activity is the primary cause. It seems to have become a partisan issue in recent years, but it wasn't always that way. Just 9 years ago in 2008, former Republican Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich sat next to Democrat Nancy Pelosi and demanded that we take action on climate change.
Hi, I'm Nancy Pelosi, lifelong Democrat and Speaker of the House.
And I'm Newt Gingrich, lifelong Republican, and I used to be Speaker.
We don't always see eye to eye, do we, Newt?
No, but we do agree our country must take action to address climate change.
We need cleaner forms of energy, and we need them fast.
If enough of us demand action from our leaders, we can spark the innovation we need.
Go to wecansolveit.org. Together, we can do this.
Kim Wright, why has climate change become a partisan issue?
Boy, I wish I had the answer to that. I think an easy response would be that we have less and less open public process with you know, many voices. I think that special interests are, you know, have a larger role in developing public policy than ever before in our history. So I wish I knew the answer to that. I think it's more complicated than I can go into. I would like to respond to the previous question on climate change in Wisconsin. You know, it's not all kind of long-term ethereal. There's very practical implications. And one example of that is there in these large industrial livestock facilities, there are technical specifications for a 100-million-gallon manure lagoon that are based on decades-old precipitation data. So every spring, it's becoming more and more predictable that we have these so-called accidents because something is as important as 100 million gallons of liquid manure. The capacity of that pit is not built to the proper standards because we're not updating readily available free data from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So it's a very practical outcome of ignoring climate change.
Well, we have things that are happening to the climate right now. We have a Category 5 hurricane, which is devastating the Caribbean and Puerto Rico. Hurricane Harvey just dumped an incredible 50 inches of rain in the Houston area. We've got wildfires that are threatening a 100-year-old center at Glacier National Park. They're roaring through the Columbia Gorge right now in Oregon, and they have entered a grove of 2,700-year-old sequoia trees in California. All of this is happening at the same time, and it's not just happening in America. It's happening all over the world. Incredible monsoon season this year in India and in Southeast Asia. Yet the media, with the exception of Wisconsin Public Radio and some other outlets, don't want to talk about the issue. And if we don't talk about it now, when will we talk about it?
Well, you know, Glenn, this is Terry. If you think about it, it's always painful to talk about something that we really don't want to face up to. And none of us want to change our lifestyles. It's difficult and challenging. But if you look at the economics of the situation and the growth of the economy into the future and the preservation of the planet, it only makes sense to take steps now. you know, there's this false dichotomy that's been set up in the mind of many people in the United States that the economy and the environment don't go hand in hand. And really, that's not true. If we take steps now to prevent further climate change, we're going to be so far ahead on all fronts. I think it's really critical that we sit back and take this information in and make planning steps, because otherwise it's going to be much more expensive and difficult to change in the future. And I think we're responding out of fear.
We've got a lot of people who are waiting patiently on the phones. Let's go to Alan and Rothschild right now. Alan, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thank you. I was telling your screener, I went camping. I live in Indiana. We went camping on the border of Indiana and Kentucky on the river down there. And it was 2 years ago, and it flooded. And the 30 miles, we drove probably 30 miles along the river. It was a raft of trash for the whole length of it. And that was only the styrofoam that was floating on the surface. You could have literally walked, if it would hold you, 30 miles on the water. We have gotten away from teaching kids about not polluting. I don't know why that stopped, but somehow when I was a kid, we had a, you know, give a hoot, don't pollute. And, you know, that was talked about. Now there's nothing about that. And, you know, speaking of waste and farmers, down where I live, they're drain tiling all their fields. And I don't know if they understand that when they run all that water off, it has to go somewhere, so it floods the cities. And if they get rid of that water, how do they replenish their groundwater? And so are they going to have to build more of these high-capacity wells? They're going to drain the aquifers out because they're getting rid of all the surface water. I mean, these guys are so short-sighted, they don't think of anything but planting some corn this year so they can make a profit, whether it kills them 10 years down the road.
All right.
And thank you.
All right, Alan, thanks for the call. I will mention that there are a lot of farmers who are not short-sighted, who are very concerned about natural resources and the resources that their own farms depend on. But Nancy, if I could have you respond to just the last one of those comments about problems with groundwater.
Yeah, Alan, thanks for your call. Well, I'm going to just harken back a little bit to the flooding that you brought up. And the way we manage our water and our landscape has a lot to do with what we see with floods, whether we pave a lot of area and don't deal with having areas where water can infiltrate, or whether we're draining the landscape, you know, for agriculture. We really have to be mindful about how we're managing this water. We're seeing, it's kind of shocking to us that in Wisconsin we're seeing groundwater depletion in some areas. Many of us would never have expected to see that in our lifetime, but we are. So I think as we go into the future, we have to understand as a society that that water is finite, and the water that we drink is finite. Our surface water needs to be managed to keep its quality, and so that we don't have flooding problems that cost us a lot of money that we can't afford.
We are talking with members of Wisconsin's Green Fire Interim Board of Directors, Coordinator and Biologist Terry Dalton, former DNR Water Quality Specialist Nancy Larson, and Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates. I'm Glenn Moberg. We do want to hear from you, and we've got a couple of callers waiting. Norm and Claire, we will get to you right after this break. And if you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. We'll be right back. Here's Johnny Cash.
There was a time the air was clean and you could see forever across the plains. The wind was sweet as honey and no one had ever heard of acid rain. We're torturing the earth and pouring every kind of evil in the sea. We violated nature and our children have to pay the penalty. Don't go near the water, children, see the fish all dead upon the shore. Don't go near the water, cause water isn't water anymore.
Support for WPR comes from the International Wisconsin Ginseng Festival, September 15th to the 17th in Wausau, offering ginseng-themed foods, hands-on activities, live music, and more. WisconsinGinsengFestival.com. Support also comes from Christine Bremer Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer and Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer and Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Set the tree out to the forest. You don't even care if I grow tall or if I fall on a windy day. The forest sighed and in reply said, you don't know the half of what I've done. I'm a puppet to the sun, and I will care for everyone. If I had the time, I'd keep you in mind.
Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, our favorite band from Stevens Point, taking us into our final segment of Route 51 as we continue our conversation with the members of Wisconsin's Green Fire. Coordinator and biologist Terry Dalton, former DNR water quality specialist Nancy Larson, and Kim Wright of Midwest Environmental Advocates. I'm Glenn Moberg. Let's go right back to the phones. We have Norm in Oneida County with a question, I believe, about the deer herd. Norm, you're on Route 51.
Yes, good morning. First thing I want to say is congratulations to Greenfire. I hope they really succeed. We certainly need more of those type of groups. As far as the predator-prey relationship, Senator Tiffany has said the deer herd was way down. We took over 320,000 deer this year during deer season. Another 10 to 12% that are shot aren't recovered, so we're over 350,000. The predators aren't certainly having that kind of effect. And plus, I'm seeing deer wherever I go. Over the last week, I came close to hitting deer twice. So I think we have to take this pressure on this nonsense off the predator-prey relationship.
All right, Norm, thanks so much for the call. Terry, do you have a response to that?
Well, I think Norm's comments are interesting and very indicative of how folks feel about the deer herd. There's a lot of strong sentiment about deer in Wisconsin and about wolves. I think the ideas that Aldo Leopold is putting forward with his comments in the essay on Green Fire really are talking about the idea that everything is connected. And when we look at an ecosystem, we can't just look at the numbers of deer and the number of wolves. We have to look at the quality of the habitat, the amount of hunting, the amount of car accidents. There's a whole myriad of things that need to be looked at together. You know, nature is a big system. And if we stop looking and for the information and the details on that system, then we fall short in our management.
Let's go to Claire in Sauk County. Claire, you're on Route 51.
Hi, Glenn. Thank you. Glenn, you're my hero, and so are your guests. And I'd like to add George Meyer to that list. I'm very, very, very worried about what's happening. This Foxconn is a perfect example. You know, they might build right in the middle of a drainage area. Scott Walker likes to say that regulations are job killers, and I think that's just a bunch of hooey. Our tourist industry in the state is $19 billion, with a B, dollars a year. We need to protect our environment, or we are in big trouble.
Claire, thanks so much for the call. Kim Wright, do you have a response to that?
Well, I'm right there with Claire that our environment is important, you know, to our economy. I remember Gaylord Nelson said that the economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment, and I think that's very true. It's been concerning to see in the last several years this fever for deregulation and exempting some of the most potentially polluting industries, extractive industries, this new untested industry in Foxconn, from just basic environmental protection. So that's very concerning. And we actually get calls from businesses around the state saying, well, when somebody isn't being held accountable to their permit, they're saying, can't you do something about that? It puts me at a competitive disadvantage. I apparently am not one of the insiders. So, you know, it's whose business or whose jobs. I just don't think that we have an open public process where, you know, sober decision-making is being made.
Chris on Facebook says, I picked up an endangered species turtle on the road that had been hit by a car, called the DNR, had a great conversation. He told me that due to budget cuts, Wisconsin no longer has a turtle person, but he gave me the phone number of the reptile person. All's well that ends well, he says, let's fix this. And then Tom on Facebook says, how ironic that this conversation is being aired at the exact time of a public hearing to reverse the longstanding prove-it-first mining law. Comments from your panel, please. And I think we've got enough time left on the show to get comments from all three of you. Let's start with Nancy Larson.
Well, the proposed sulfide mining bill is one that concerns many of our members. And as we kind of move into our establishment as an organization, this is one of the issues that we'll be looking at. But it's happening really fast, as Tom mentioned. There's a hearing in Ladysmith today. So there's a lot of people that will be there. A lot of people are concerned about this bill, as are many of our members.
And we'd asked George Meyer, the former head of the DNR, to be on this panel today, and he is in Ladysmith testifying against that bill. Kim Wright, your perspective on the sulfide mining bill that's currently before the public in Ladysmith.
Well, I think for me, the obvious, again, is that there is this dangerous extractive industry that should be held to the highest standards rather than being exempted. Some of the changes in the bill on groundwater is just shocking to me, that we would at this time lessen our protections of groundwater. But what, from my 30 years of conservation in Wisconsin, what really bothers me the most is that these very, very important issues that affect economies and public health, that they're just rushed through, and that they're backroom deals where, you know, people, industries that are positioned to make money are the ones that are you know, writing the tickets. In most of our history in Wisconsin, something of this level of importance, we would have had statewide conversations for 1 or 2 years with full stakeholder involvement, where lots of information and interests come to the table. And, you know, DNR has played the role of the big ship that pulled us all forward together and sorted out those interests and balanced those interests. So it's very concerning to see this sort of shotgun approach, you know, just, you know, a bill is introduced and then there's a hearing and then it's done.
Ladysmith Administrator Al Christensen says it's time to quit judging mining by how it was done a century ago or even decades ago. And he says new mines, like the one in Ladysmith, would be an economic boost to northern Wisconsin. He said, allow northern counties a means to deal with aging and declining populations resulting from economic stagnation. Allow some mineral production taxes to flow south to Madison rather than just sending transfer payments north. Terry Dalton, what's wrong with that statement?
Well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that statement if the legislation that's proposed has had a thorough airing, has good factual information behind it, and has had a chance for the public to respond and for folks from both sides of the political fence to weigh in. You know, these things are not, should not be partisan. It should be Republicans and Democrats, scientists, public people working all together to develop a good bill that will allow for these lawful activities. But we also want to make sure we aren't throwing the baby out with the bathwater. These minerals are all of our resources. They're part of the public domain. Well, they're owned by mineral companies, but, you know, this is part of our heritage. We need to make sure that when those things are extracted, that we're also not destroying the shared resources of land, water, and air. So we need to make sure we have good science behind these kinds of policy initiatives.
The Wisconsin state flag has a miner on it, Nancy Larson. The phrase "the Badger State" refers to mining. Shouldn't we be seeing more mining in Wisconsin?
Well, mining is certainly part of our history and heritage, and you know, just speaking for myself, I don't think there's anything wrong with mining. Some of my family works in the mining industry, but it has to be done in a way that the costs of it are not put on the overall taxpayer, and that we are protecting, we're safeguarding our water, we're safeguarding our air and the land around us. So if it can be done in a way that protects our communities, that's great. And it's important that we have laws that protect us.
Kim, you've got about 10 seconds for a final comment, and then we've got to wrap things up.
Well, I want to end on a positive note. Again, I've worked statewide for 30 years. In this time where our government, for one reason or another, has taken a back seat on protecting our natural heritage, all over the state, especially in communities that are at threat, you know, that where there's a problem, it's everyday citizens are pulling together and working together, and it's Republicans and Democrats working together. So the headlines really aren't a good view of what's happening in Wisconsin.
All right. Thank you. We are out of time.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
We want to thank our guests, Terry Dalton, Nancy Larson, and Kim Wright. I'm Glenn Mobrick. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, and our on-air producer, Jana Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music and audio today by Tom Lehrer, Peter Coyote from the movie Green Fire, Jeff Beck, The Pretenders, Johnny Cash, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, Yours Truly, and Roy Rogers and Dale Evans. Next week on Route 51, we look back on the Vietnam War 50 years later with a panel discussion of Ken Burns' new documentary on the subject. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.